being closer to my roots through music, through the clothes that we wear, the beads that we wear, through language, really gave me a very, very strong anchor. And that kept me going with my music. In a way, music saved me a lot.
I'm Laura Quiñones, and you're listening to Amplify Her, a new podcast from the United Nations with support from SoundCloud. Every week, we meet inspirational women artists defeating all odds in a still male-dominated industry. Today, we take you all the way to Malaysia to talk to Alina Murang, a young artist working to preserve its Dayak Kelavit indigenous roots steam from the rainforests and highlands of the island of Borneo. Murang's name has become synonymous with the sape, a lute instrument of the highland tribes of the island, traditionally reserved for male healers. The first female to professionally perform and teach this instrument, she sings in the endangered languages of Kelavit and Kenaya. Her work to preserve intangible cultural heritage has been recognized by UNESCO, where she has acted as a youth representative. Deeply influenced by the lives of her ancestors, rock music and folk, her music is a journey of past and present that allows her to share the stories of her people. She told us about her journey into music, her deep connection with her indigenous roots, as well as the challenges of being a mixed-race kid. And of course, she told us all about the magnificent instrument she plays, the sape.
My father, he's from the Kelavit community, and we are a small community of about 6,000 to 8,000 people. Our language is endangered. We're people of the highlands, up in the mountains, very much river people. So we live in the headwaters of the rivers. And in the past, before we were called Kelavit people, we identified ourselves by the name of the rivers. So I would say that I'm from Pat Luan, or the Luan River. If you can picture Borneo on a map, the island of Borneo, and we want to go right into the heart of Borneo, where the Indonesian-Malaysian border is. That's where our people is from. Where my father is from in the Kelavit Highlands, it's some of the oldest rainforests in the world. And his generation were the first to get formal education, and they were the first to leave the rainforest and move into cities and towns and, you know, overseas. My mom, she's half English, half Italian, and she came out to Sarawak in Borneo teaching English as a volunteer teacher. And I think she was only meant to stay a couple of months. It was 3 months or 6 months. And she met my father and they got engaged quite quickly. And yeah, she's lived in Borneo for most of her life now. I didn't grow up in the village. My generation, we are the first to be born outside of the rainforests. I grew up in Kuching, which is kind of a 1 hour flight plus another 1 hour flight away from the village. Even though we grew up not in the village, we grew up in the town, I was still very, very close to community because my household was always full of family. And amongst us, you know, a population of 6,000 or 8,000, somehow we are all related. So we're a huge family. And our people traditionally live in longhouses. And you can imagine living in a longhouse, it's a huge shared space and shared resources, shared food, shared water. And so kind of that livelihood of living together and really sharing all that you have as a community has extended to the Kelavit community across the world. Wherever I go in the world, if there's a Kelavit person, I can go and stay with them, even though I've never met them before. And that's the kind of family that I grew up with. there's two sides to growing up as a mixed kid. You know, on one hand, I just really, really wanted to fit in. So I went to a local school as opposed to an international school. And I had kids telling me to go back home, go back to where I came from. And I was quite confused because, you know, that's where I came from. And as well, I felt extra connected to my roots because I was so connected to my father's Kalabit roots. So that was quite a big struggle, this kind of identity crisis. In Asia, people don't think I'm Asian, and in the UK, people don't think I'm white. So this big identity crisis going on. But, you know, I got through that. I think art and music actually really helped me get through that. But there's the beautiful side of being a mixed kid as well, you know, having so many experiences and living with so many cultures and having relatives all across the world has been so fulfilling and just opened my heart to different experiences and different things. Being closer to my roots through music, through the clothes that we wear, the beads that we wear, through language, really gave me a very, very strong anchor. And that kept me going with my music. In a way, music saved me a lot. So my parents are not musical. They do love listening to music. And then my brother started playing the drums. So I really wanted to go and play the guitar so that I could spend Saturdays with him. While he learns the drums, I'll go learn the guitar. So that's how I started learning classical guitar when I was about 9. My cousins and I, every Saturday when we were kids, we would meet up for traditional dance classes. We didn't really enjoy learning traditional dance. We did it because our moms made us. Also, because we love spending time with each other after the classes. And we would perform at very, very small functions, community events. So during one of these Saturday afternoons, I think it was Auntie Nikki took the initiative to invite a grand auntie to come and teach us how to sing these old Kalabit songs. Obviously, as kids, we didn't know how much of a big deal it was back then, because a lot of these songs skip a generation, and a lot of elders do not want to remember these songs because they might clash with their current belief system, which is Christianity. We learned this beautiful old song, Ulin. It's a love song. It's this young girl sitting down in the longhouse, singing about the different sounds of thunder outside, and she's hoping that her lover will come back from the farm safely. And if he comes back from the farm safely, she will slaughter a chicken in thanks. Some of the community were not so happy about this and questioning us and questioning our mothers. Should these young girls really be singing about lovers and be singing about sacrificing chickens? And one of our moms turned around and said, well, you know, these girls listen to MTV anyway. It's kind of, you know, the same thing. You know, there's a pinch of truth in it as well. So many people, even in Malaysia, haven't heard of the sabit before. And it's a very special instrument. It's a lute instrument, traditionally with 4 strings in pentatonic scaling. My generation, my cousins and I, we started learning dancing around the age of 6, and the dance is to the sabit music. My cousins and I, we decided that we wanted to learn the sabit because it was purely out of a creative need. Back then, there was only one CD recording of sabit music, and we thought that instead of having to rely on that CD recording, why don't half of us go and learn the sabit? We really did not know the significance of what we were doing back then. It used to only be played by men. And they played because they were the ritual healers. And sabit was used in ritual healing ceremonies. So in the past, it was believed that sabit could heal physical ailments, spiritual ailments, emotional ailments. And when Christianity came into the highlands, a lot of our practices to do with the old belief system were put aside. And that was a lot of our art and a lot of our music, a lot of our dance. Therefore, my father's generation largely do not play the sapit. A few years later, I think maybe 4 or 5 years later, half of us cousins who were dancing, girl cousins, we all decided we wanted to learn the sapit. So we went and asked Uncle Matthew. He was the only sapit teacher in town or nearby us. So we went and approached him and asked him if he would teach us the sapit. I didn't realize until much, 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 much later that he actually went back and asked himself if he should really be teaching these young girls the sapit, because what would the community say? You know, girls weren't allowed to touch the sapit. And he said to himself, look, no one else is learning the sapit, and if these girls want to learn, I'll be the ones to teach them. So he's been my teacher now for over 20 years. I never ever thought that I would be a musician, and I never ever thought I could be a musician. I actually studied business and then went on to work in a management consulting firm and later on in an NGO. Some guys who I used to work with, they're in a world music band, and they were some of the very, very few people who knew that I played sapit, and they invited me to join them on a tour in the US for 6 weeks. So I joined their world music band and did that. And ever since then, that was 2014, ever since then, I had just been getting calls to go and perform sapit at small community events, small markets and fairs. And suddenly, you know, those shows started getting bigger and bigger and overseas. It's been a very, very organic journey. Write songs, when we put the songs together, we're actually very intentional about it in terms of, you know, making sure that the sapit is very much highlighted rather than an afterthought, making sure that the other instruments are following the sapit as a lead rather than the sapit fitting into what we usually know as band music. And even with the songs and the lyrics, we're very intentional with how we use them. We want to make sure that it doesn't harm anybody, it doesn't misrepresent our community, and we take it as a responsibility to our community. Our songs have changed from generation to generation. You know, we had some people come to us and say, oh, you know, this song is too pop now, this song is too modern now, this song is too rock now, you know? And it got to us because we just want to make our community and our elders proud. And when we sat and thought about it, we thought, you know what? The best thing that we can do is to be honest to ourselves. And who we are young people who are half Calabit, half something else, who grew up in the city and still have close roots back to home. And that's exactly what our music is. It's really nice to see in the last 10 years the sapit being picked up so much by so many people, you know, by people of all ages, by girls, boys, men, women. My oldest student was 70 years old. I'm very happy to see as well. There's this one young girl, she's not my student, but I've been talking to her teacher a lot, and he said that she really looks up to me. She's about 10 years old. And she's just incredible on the sapit, and she's way better than I am, I can tell you that. It's something that I never ever thought was possible. I would say to other young Indigenous women who would maybe like to be a musician or like to delve more into their culture, and if you're not sure how to do it, don't worry, because there are days when I still am not sure, because nobody has really gone before us and shown us the way to do it. Our elders had completely different lives. So my suggestion would be to just do it. There's no right way to do it. Just see what works, try and adjust, and reach out to other creators who you would like to learn from. People like me, and I'm sure others as well, would be happy to share what we know. And once again, don't be afraid of not knowing at all. As cheesy as it sounds, nature really, really inspires me the most. I can find so many songs and lyrics in the wind and in the clouds, in the rivers. I find that if I'm not able to spend time in nature, I just have a complete creative block. I get a lot of people talking to me about preserving culture, preserving traditions, and using this word preserving, when actually our culture is very much contemporary and evolving and adapting, and that's the way culture can survive. I realized that it comes to me as a responsibility, and if we don't take it on, then it's just going to be lost, and I'm not ready for it to be lost.
That was Alena Murang. You can find all of her amazing videos and meet the sape instrument on her YouTube channel. In the next episode, we talk to Lia Lia, a half-Chinese, half-German young artist who learned to sing before even speaking and now is making headlines in Japan and Germany for her talent as an artist and as a video director. Amplifier is dedicated to women and girls everywhere, particularly to those whose dreams and aspirations are unfulfilled due to discrimination and oppression. The empowerment of women and girls is an essential part of the UN's mission. You can find out how the UN is fighting for gender equality worldwide on our website, news.un.org. Amplifier is hosted by me, Laura Quiñones, and produced by Connor Lennon. Sound design is by Garrett Crow. This episode was made possible by Sharmin Shahira and Alena Murang. Thanks to Mita Hosali, Victor Evans Harvey, Matthew Wells, Mark Petimeses, Fang Cheng, Gretchen Corcuera, Takako Nagumo, and Erica Mendez from UN News. And thanks to Shona Alexander, Emma Lenz, Lauren Holden, and Heather Mundinger from SoundCloud. Amplifier is a UN News production with support from SoundCloud.